Good morning. It's Tuesday morning. It is City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. As you know, this morning we're talking about comedy, alternative comedy. Far as I'm concerned, long overdue. Let's get a thought on this, and let's talk to someone who's going to be in the city later this week on the Friday at the Unity Theatre here in Liverpool. It's Rona Cameron, who's on the line. Good morning.
Hello, morning there.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I mean, you've had a really interesting kind of journey from 1992 winning Channel 4's So You Think You're Funny Award to obviously where you are now, and people will know you from various stand-up shows and obviously your book as well, and also various TV shows.
Yeah.
Was it a conscious decision for you to actually go and do something different comedy-wise, or did it just kind of happen?
You mean originally going into my career?
Yeah.
You know, I had all the hallmarks of somebody at school that was going to do something... you know, it was going to stand out, really. So I knew I was very creative. It was confusing for me as a teenager because I could paint. I was originally going to go to art school, and I could act a bit. And I was a good writer, won a lot of competitions. I could write poetry and all sorts of stuff. So I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to be. Obviously, being quite tomboyish and not the usual kind of girly that would get into drama school in those days. I went to see Victoria Wood in The Fringe when I was 16, and I kind of thought, oh, that's interesting, because she's kind of a bit boyish and she's doing basically characters, stories from childhood, laughing at the sort of constraints of, you know, of working class British life. And I kind of was interested in all that as a person who grew up with quite old people and always hung about with my grand's friends and had all these stories and, you know, the weirdness of generally being brought up in Scotland, which I have to say is not like anywhere else on the planet in terms of it being a completely mental place. But so I went to see her and I thought, yeah, interesting. But then I did nothing for years, and bits and pieces, menial work, a lot of destructive stuff, travelling round, obviously, drinking, doing stuff. And then I ended up, there would not be time. You'd have to do a two-hour show for me just to tell the story. So to cut the very long story short, I kind of didn't do anything until about 1990 of a comedy nature, where I tried out a few stories in a club and I won a competition in 92, and that was it. It was very, very quick for me and very easy and felt very natural. But I didn't study comedy or go to sea much. As a kid, I went to the North Pier in Blackpool with my parents and saw Little and Large and stuff like that. But I didn't study it. Wasn't obsessed with it. It was just I felt quite natural on stage more than off stage.
Okay, that's kind of interesting, because you do read like a lot of comedians. I mean, Paul Merton springs to mind as someone who is obsessive about studying comedy and comedians of the past.
He doesn't really do stand up.
No,
Paul's not a stand up. You know, Paul is a hugely intelligent man, as we all know, and he's got, you know, he does his career. It's very different from mine. Or he's never, a lot of those people in that. You know, a lot of people in comedy don't actually do stand-up.
No.
I mean, you know, for instance, Saunders didn't do much stand-up. They did a little bit in the beginning. But to kind of make your living as a stand-up with a mic in the clubs, which is the beginning of a comedy career, and sometimes for a lot of people is your comedy career and for years, and that's a, God, it beats doing anything else for a living in terms of that. I personally wouldn't want to do the clubs for the rest of my life, and I'm glad that I haven't had to do them for years, but... you know, that Paul Merton's is a very different kind of thing. He's also, he's like a sort of, I don't know what he is. He's a hugely interesting man, but he doesn't, he's not primarily known as a stand-up. Great improv, but not a stand-up comedian.
Would you say he was part of the kind of alternative scene? And we're talking about this morning, because I remember very clearly when I was growing up, and I'll use the analogy of, you know, very fat, balding, sweaty men, a certain stereotype would be on telly telling mother-in-law jokes, racist, sexist jokes. Then there was almost this revolution in the early to mid-80s. And I remember quite clearly, and the two things that stand out, one is The Young Ones, the TV show. The other was a Channel 4 show called Saturday Night Live, where people like Ben Elton and French and Saunders kind of came to the fore. And to me, that was like when there was almost a revolution when it came to alternative comedy. I mention that because what's interesting is you mentioned Victoria Wood a few minutes ago, who I suppose was alternative, but in a slightly different way.
Well, I would always find someone like Victoria Wood, who's, you know, from the Alan Bennett sort of school, like I said, all making very, you know, astute, almost psychological observations about working class life with incredible pathos and poignancy and, you know, and very funny. I prefer that to somebody doing political comedy in the 80s. I mean, in those days, to be honest, it was very easy to just get an act just going up on stage and slagging off Thatcher, which I think is a bit boring. I mean, I like politics to be quite serious, you know. I mean, I could talk for an hour quite angrily about politics and about Thatcher and how she destroyed the country and how we are seeing that now. But I'm not really that very interested in joking about it. There was a lot of there was a backlash against that around that time. You know, the 80s were you'd have to also compare it to what was happening politically at the time. The 80s, a very bleak time, unless you, of course, you were a nice middle class white person living in the city, making lots of money in you know, in a stock market, etc., driving a GTI with a, you know, seat at the Arsenal ground or whatever. I'm just explaining one friend's journey there, by the way, as I glibly just put in a whole load of stereotypes and hope that she's not listening. But for the most of us, we lived up north and could see what happened to these huge towns that were, you know, completely demolished, you know, as industries were closed down, communities came apart, heroin flooded in. You know, the whole country was a nightmare from 1979 onwards. But what was brilliant about it was there's a sense of trying to change it. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of anti-apartheid stuff, a lot of stuff trying to help, you know, Nicaragua. There's a lot of stuff happening. Well, I was constantly involved in all that stuff. There was a lot of the anti-nuclear Greenham stuff. And so this was reflected also in this growing political comedy scene, which people like Alexei Sale and that came very much to the front and did some very left-wing, anti-Thatcher, anti-capitalist stuff. And there's some great comedians today, Mark Steele, Mark Thomas, being you know, the late Linda Smith, were all wonderful. They still are, with the two Marks, social commentators, and who are at Rob Newman as well, someone I greatly admire. That's just not my bag, though. That's not my thing. I prefer more personal type of comedy. I like more of the Billy Connolly school of kind of rambling, observational, quirky life stuff, how we all behave, the subtext to our conversations, what we're really thinking, feeling, you know, neurosis. I prefer that. But the 80s was a huge platform for the birth of, yes, what they call alternative comedy. And no one had seen women on stage doing anything other than impressions up to that point. Yeah. Certainly no one had seen women on stage standing up and saying, talking about their bodies and, you know, the social attitudes to them. But, you know, after a while, I think that wore a bit thin, got a bit dull. I think at any point now, if women were to talk about their menstrual cycle, unless they found a really new, fantastically ironic angle, it would be considered dreary, dull, outdated, and frankly embarrassing. But at the time, it was a very, very important step forward in marking a time of change, a time of expression, a time of backlash, fight back against the very repressive Thatcherite years of the 80s. Mm. And that's really how alternative comedy came. We've always had that middle-class Oxbridge thing going on. Yeah. There's always been that. That's always going. And Radio 4 is and the BBC has always been a huge home for them. And even people who are not doing very much still seem to get shows on Radio 4 as long as you went to the right school.
Yeah.
But and that's always gone on. And, of course, they produced legends as well, didn't they? They produced, you know, there's the old, and there's the Peter Cook, Dudley Moore.
Yeah,
and there's
Stephen
the
Fry.
News, Monty Python, the Goodies, all that sort of stuff. So these are all institutions. So there's been these different types of comedy. But the great thing about the growth of the open mic, shall we say, is that anybody could do it. And it was also a chance for working class people, because comedy and social commentary up until that point was very much a middle class Oxbridge preoccupation. And other than the Carry On films, which I'm a great fan of, you know, you either got this intelligent, ironic spin on the news, which was very Oxbridge-y, or you got, you know, the British obsession with sexual innuendo. But then suddenly, anybody who had enough balls could just pick up a mic. Anybody who had enough guts could just pick up a mic and, you know, do their thing. And this is when comedy really opened up.
So from your view, I mean, now is a good place for comedy? Comedy is in a healthy place in this country?
I don't know. I don't really follow it. I'm not much interested in it. Whenever I go to see comedy, very rarely, I always find it a little disappointing. I went to see Chris Rock last week, and I was really looking forward to him, and he was good. You know, he had some couple of good lines, but I didn't find him fantastic. But I thought he was good, and I loved seeing Jerry Seinfeld a few years ago, right. When he played the Palladium. Did two shows back to back, and I love him. I think the best comedians for me will always be Billy Connolly. Eddie Izzard, I think, is the best British comedian, probably one of the best comedians, if not the best, in the world. I've always thought Eddie was, you know, a one-off genius, and I think his take on things are fantastic. I like Jerry Seinfeld. I like Ellen DeGeneres. I think she is...
Yeah.
She's up there as top three, I'd say. And I don't see her as a woman or a lesbian. I just think she's Ellen DeGeneres. She's got some great observational stuff. She has got half a dozen writers as well, but she's a great, great observational comedian. But I don't really follow comedy. I didn't see a lot of it before I went on stage. And you have to appreciate that a lot of people just... The early forays into comedy is very draining and often destructive, and as we know, it's well documented, hugely hedonistic.
Yeah.
For most of us, it started out, we were taking so much alcohol and drugs that it's hard to remember the first 10 years, so there was no great... Some people, you know, had those plans of, I'm going to get into comedy and I'm going to do this, and then eventually I'm going to sign up with this. But for most of us, we're from the old osh-bosh rock and roll school of... Outsider, can't fit in anywhere else, don't want to use an alarm clock, may as well do this.
Yeah.
And that can lead on to many different things.
Sure.
That's the difference. That's what happened with what you would call alternative comedy. I mean, I grew up with comedy in the 90s, so I didn't really grow up with comedians that were doing mother-in-law jokes.
No.
Although, to be fair, in a way, we all do jokes about parents.
Yeah.
Men have still been joking about women for years.
Yeah.
And certainly everybody's always, I think, joked about gay people. And I think there's some very...
But the racial jokes have disappeared, haven't they?
That's the only thing.
Yeah.
I noticed Chris Rock was also trying to persuade the audience that it's slightly justifiable to say faggot. And not to say nigger, unless... But he did say a very funny story, which I won't spoil in case anyone's still seeing him on his tour. He did a very funny routine about when it's okay to say nigger. People are... Well, there's, as we know, on a serious note, there's huge problems with race in this country, and it's a subject that people are at least able to talk about. I mean, Chris Rock did... an hour and a half of jokes, and, you know, 80% of it was about being black.
Mm.
But he just said for one moment, as a prelude to a routine, there's a lot of racism. And, you know, the whole room, the whole 15,000 people at the O2 Centre went silent.
Mm.
And I really felt the tension of that. So, you know, but on the other hand, people still joke about gay people all the time. So
yeah.
I think homophobia and racism should be on a par, because I feel like we should all, we should try to get rid of both of these things.
I think you're right.
But, I just see myself as a person. I've got, luckily for me, a part of my sexuality has made me able to identify with masculinity and identify with femininity. So from that point of view, I feel in a more of an empowered situation to talk about life rather than from a woman's point of view or a man's point of view. So I like that. I have talked non-stop. It's because I had a coffee, and I just want to make one more point.
I've got one more question, but you fire away. Go on.
Yeah. No, one more point, which is that, there was a time in the 90s where people started hiring comedians to do so many other things than just stand-up.
Yeah.
And before then, that had been the usual privilege of people that went to Oxbridge. It's always been considered that people that go to Oxbridge can, you know, do stand-up, write reviews, write an award-winning novel, lead the country, you know. But the great thing about... I just let my mum come in the door for a second, so there's no noise with that. We'll just have to wait for a sec, Mum. The great thing about stand-up, that it opened it up to everybody, is that you can get people from different backgrounds, people who look different, Johnny Vegas, whatever, you can get a whole range of characters that could go into this business and then could show that they have other talents, whether it's writing books or directing a sitcom or doing serious acting. And it really opened up in the mid-90s, and people wanted comedians to do everything because they realized that we've got more confidence and can talk more than other people. So they often get comedians to save shows, to be honest, to run shows and to create shows. And so that's been the growth of comedy, you see.
I've enjoyed this conversation. It's been great getting your take on this. We must just mention this coming Friday, you're in the city as part of our comedy festival at the Unity Theatre. A four-year absence. I mean, what can people expect on Friday?
Well, I went back to the festival last year. I did give it up for 4.5 years. I had a couple of books to write, and so I didn't really want to be spreading myself thinly over other areas. And also, I stopped drinking in 5 years. I don't go to AA or anything. Yeah. I just stopped drinking because, I don't know if you've ever seen the film Memento, but that's kind of like my life. I go around places talking to people, trying to find out where I've been for 20 years.
And how's that going, the stopping the drinking? Is it something that you find easy? I mean, I've got relatives who don't drink now. Mm. I've got a work colleague here who gave up booze for a year and did a blog about it. I mean, do you find that still a challenge on a day-to-day basis?
No, not at all, not at all.
It's got easier.
No, not at all. It's sometimes, you know, like if I'm on hot, I mean, I go to Spain quite a lot. There's a little village there that I stay in a lot. And sometimes there, when it's hot and you're sitting about at night, it'd be nice to have a nice glass of Rioja or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure I will in a couple of years. I don't believe in demonising alcohol. I believe that a person has various psychological problems and they use alcohol or drugs or any other thing to anaesthetise themselves.
I think you're right,
but I think once you clear that out, sober up, have a free mind, don't try and escape so much, face life, go into analysis, you can cure yourself of all these things, and so I feel kind of refreshed, and I'm 42 now, so I'm kind of more my own woman than I've ever been. I'm pretty, you know, I'm better adjusted now than I have been, so take everything with a bit more of a pinch of salt, you know. But I loved doing the festival last year, and someone approached me and said, "You'd like to do some gigs next year? We tour." And I thought, well, okay, and then I'll just take the first half of the year off. I'm very lazy, you know. I don't do. I'm not one of these people who are hugely ambitious. I've got certain things that I want to tick off my list, and I believe that I'm, you know, doing my books is one of them, and doing a book to film would be another, and that's in the process. So it'll all get done. But for the meantime, I just thought I'd do a wee bit stand up because it's a nice way to make a living for a while.
Quite right. Listen, we look forward to seeing you in Liverpool on Friday. Ronan Cameron, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks very much. Thanks a lot. See you.